This is The Thirsty Developer, episode number 43 for Monday, December 1st, 2008, developing on SharePoint. For this week's interview, Larry sits down with Darren Bishop, a Microsoft MVP on Windows SharePoint Services, to talk about how a developer can get started developing for Microsoft Office SharePoint Services and for Windows SharePoint Services. This interview was recorded at the recent Moss Camp Chicago 2008 in downtown Chicago on November 14th, 2008. Let's listen in. Hi, this is Larry Clarkin, and I'm on location at Moss Camp Chicago 2008, which is a community dev camp style event focused on Moss and, more specifically, just the SharePoint platform in general, Windows SharePoint Services, and Microsoft Office SharePoint Services 2007, you know, all of those editions. I've run into Darren Bishop here. Darren, can you say hello to him?
Hello, everybody.
And Darren, what do you do?
I'm an independent consultant. I run my own company and focus pretty much on SharePoint 100%.
And you're also one of our Microsoft MVPs on Windows SharePoint Services, right?
That's correct. A couple of years on and off. I've done SharePoint since 2001 and community events and things like that and keep the MVP going.
Yeah, and wanted to thank you for coming out today. You gave a great presentation on how to develop and preparing your development environment for SharePoint, and that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about. I want to tell you something that actually angers me. When I'm talking to people, is that when you ask somebody, "Do you know SharePoint?" and they say, "No, I don't know anything about SharePoint." And then you ask them, and you find out that they're an accomplished .NET developer. They've been doing .NET for several years, and they've got a lot of experience in ASP.NET. And sure. So we wanted to talk about a little bit about how the skills that you have in ASP.NET can translate into SharePoint development. So sure. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Most people don't realize, they haven't spent the time looking at it, but SharePoint really is primarily an ASP.NET application that becomes a framework for future development. So if you're an ASP.NET developer, you're halfway there. You just need to learn some specifics about SharePoint, but you can certainly pick up and take off real quick developing on the SharePoint platform and getting the benefits of the security, things like the membership providers, all that stuff. All of it comes from ASP.NET. So you've got a good idea of what's going on with ASP.NET. You're already there.
Yeah, really, I like to position it as it's SharePoint is ASP.NET plus a whole lot of additional features. And a lot of them are
exactly.
those fundamental platform things that you talked about, like security, with you get the presence,
Awareness.
Yes. Yeah. You get some document management capabilities that aren't in the core platform. But let's talk about some of the things that absolutely 100% translate, pick up, and move. And one of them is that you mentioned right away was Master Pages.
Well, Master Pages are an ASP.NET concept. So if you've done ASP.NET Master Pages, the concept is a little bit different, but 90% you're right into ASP.NET when you're working with SharePoint. You may use a different tool like a SharePoint Designer for it, and you may place it in a different location in the libraries that Moss or WSS provides for in the catalog libraries, but it's still strictly the whole concept of having a master page with content areas that you plug in content from your actual pages, your content pages. So if you've done work on that, you can certainly translate that into SharePoint.
So you mentioned a tool a second ago, the SharePoint Designer, and just for the, we're kind of targeting this podcast at, I'm a traditional .NET developer who uses Visual Studio. Tell us really quickly, just thumbnail sketch, kind of what SharePoint Designer is, because it's an alternative tool in some ways to Visual Studio, some overlap, a little bit of both.
Probably a little bit of both. As an end user, as a power user, they can use a tool to configure a SharePoint site, which would be like a pre-built ASP.NET web app for somebody, and they can use it to configure without going back to the developers for everything. As a developer, I use it to do my design and layout and take from that and roll it into deployable packages. So it gives me the ability to drag and drop the UI to attach information, to build certain things, and I can either just deploy it as is, or if I want to make it more deployable across many different machines or redeployable, I might take the code that it built for me and roll it into a feature solution and deploy it in other environments that way. So it does workflow, it does design, you create lists, add web parts, configure your pages, all sorts of things with it.
And we're going to talk in a couple minutes about, you know, how to configure, you know, your development workstation to work on SharePoint. But I wanted to ask you, you know, the question just point blank. So you, as somebody who does a lot of SharePoint development, in addition to Visual Studio, sure. You also have SharePoint Designer installed, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's one of the key tools. So on a develop environment that I use, generally you're going to see all the SQL tools. You're going to see SharePoint, SharePoint Designer, some ancillary tools. You'll see Visual Studio right now, 2008 SP1 is what I have on all my machines. You also see the Visual Studio extensions for WSS, which allows us to build some constructs in SharePoint easier through Visual Studio.
Yeah, and we'll what I'll do is on the show notes, if you go to thirstydeveloper.com and look at this show, I'll actually put links to all those different tools. Because I think that at the end of this, we'll probably have a good checklist for somebody who wants to get into SharePoint development.
And there's so many different ones. I can give you a list of what I commonly use or what I suggest, but you can talk to any other, you know, hardcore SharePoint developer, and they'll have seven different ones that they use and some that they don't find interesting. So personal preference, but there's more than enough tools to get you along easily.
Okay, let's talk about another concept. You know, so we talked about master pages. They achieve the same result. There's a little differences in tooling, the differences in how you deploy it. But I think that, you know, as somebody who's looked at master pages in SharePoint,
sure,
it's very familiar from a concept standpoint.
Absolutely.
You pick up on it, you know, almost immediately. One of the things that's a little different is that if I'm doing traditional ASP.NET development, I have two constructs called user controls and server controls that I can, you know, use to create, you know, little individual components that I can reuse on multiple pages. ASP.NET 2.0 and higher added another construct that's actually shared with SharePoint. So if you're a .NET developer, you may not have seen this before, but it's in the actual framework itself. It's called a web part.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and SharePoint has, you know, the bulk of SharePoint that you get out of the box, you know, is a bunch of web parts that you can configure.
Yeah, the SharePoint, the bulk of the components are in the built-in UI that you get out of the box. A lot of them are controls, user controls, and then some of them are web parts. And the web parts has a long history. They've been around. I think originally they were called Nuggets. If you go way back before 2001,
you got to set the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, it's a Wayback Machine. That's before SharePoint 2001 came out. And then SharePoint 2001 came out, and we had a script-based version of Web Parts. 2003 really shone because we had now a .NET compiled version of Web Parts. The benefit of this is a Web Part is a control like any other control that a ASP.NET developer would build. But it's in the runtime more as a page is being generated. Information is coming from the database, personalization information, and it allows us to build these pages more dynamically on the fly. So the pages have a spot where are these zones where we can add web parts. And when the page gets generated, it actually checks to see, okay, based on this template, look and see what web parts are in these zones, and then put them in there as I'm building the page. Whereas a static ASP.NET page is, you have to have a developer go in and put it right in the page. We can actually add it at runtime while we're looking at the user interface and make changes and personalizations. The 2007 version now brought the web part concept from SharePoint land into ASP.NET and created the whole framework inside of ASP.NET. And now SharePoint 2007 layers a little bit on top of that, but the core ASP.NET web part framework is driving the SharePoint framework now.
So one of the things I could do is if I didn't have a SharePoint infrastructure, I could still take advantage of the benefits of web parts just with using a standard ASP.NET, you know, 2.0 and higher site, right?
Absolutely. ASP.NET, the core is ASP.NET. So in general, you can develop web parts in an ASP.NET environment and they will transfer over and generally will run in a SharePoint environment, 2007 environment, because it is based off of ASP.NET.
So generally sounds like a big disclaimer, right? May not work on your instance or something.
You certainly can put things in that may not play nice with SharePoint.
It's bustable, but, you know.
The general practice and the, I would say, considered the best practice and the accepted practice is most SharePoint developers will not create SharePoint-specific web parts using the SharePoint-specific web part class. They will use the ASP.NET web part because it provides 90% of the functionality. SharePoint has overridden those for some specific features that ASP.NET did not give, but generally we don't use those features. So probably since SharePoint 2007 has deployed, I probably have created maybe one or two SharePoint-specific web parts. They're all ASP.NET web parts.
And that was like probably a situation where you had to light up a specific feature that was only available in the SharePoint web part, right?
Actually, no. It was more along the lines of connections, cross-page connections, some we had in SharePoint web parts in the 2003 version. ASP.NET did not really have all the connections that the previous one had. So to do some upgrades, et cetera, we couldn't go with the ASP.NET web part. We had to go with the enhanced SharePoint version of it. It gave me the connection back to do the upgrade. You can build an ASP.NET web part inside of SharePoint and take advantage of SharePoint constructs and SharePoint APIs, but you obviously can't run that in a straight ASP.NET. You would be forced to keep that ASP.NET on your SharePoint server so it can get to those APIs.
So the easiest way to say this is you can always go up,
exactly,
but it's you may not be able to go down.
Exactly.
Okay. So I don't want to put you on the spot too much here, but give us a good use case, you know, for a web part, a good example of how it's different than, like, just say a custom server control or a user control.
Well, if you compare controls, a web part is a control. It's a type of control, but it's more dynamic. So anytime you would like a user to create or change your control for them, now you're talking about personalization. So the weather web part is always the example that we, and it seems like everybody wants the weather shown on their SharePoint page.
But they want their weather, not the weather at headquarters.
Exactly. We don't want Seattle weather when we get back to Illinois. You know, we want to put in Chicago or Springfield weather. So you, using a web part, individual users can go in and personalize it if they have the permissions to do so and change the zip code property of that web part to reflect their zip code, get their weather. Now, they did this in the UI. No developer had to go into the actual page itself behind the scenes and make this change. It's more of a runtime configuration. You also can drag and drop this. So if you allow the person, you can drag a web part from the left side of the page to the right side of the page if we allow them to do that and personalize it or add other web parts and personalize our page for them. That's a great use of personalization.
Right. And I know that you know, what web parts you're able to, you know, change on a page, what zones they live in, how many zones are on the page. That's an administratable configured option, right?
Exactly. That goes down to designing the page. We need to create these zones in the spot that we want. The out-of-the-box web parts have zones, or out-of-the-box pages have zones. And as admins, designers, and developers, we design those pages or change those pages, put the zones where we need them, and then also give permissions to the users as who can do what with these web parts. So we can lock people out from being able to move things. We can lock them out from closing or minimizing these web parts. It's just what your needs are.
And I guess we haven't defined a zone yet for the listeners, but it's, sure, it's basically a container for web parts, right?
Exactly. And ASP.NET has a zone, and then SharePoint has a slightly more specific zone just for their use when you're in SharePoint. But that's the container, and the page rendering mechanism knows when it hits a zone, it knows to go out and find out what information's in that zone and grab that and then place it in there during page rendering time. So it's not a free-for-all. You can't just drag and drop web parts everywhere. You can dynamically drag and drop web parts and configure them when they're in zones.
Can we spend a couple of minutes talking about data access? Because that's another area where you get a real advantage out of SharePoint. You know, that if I'm doing a custom ASP.NET page, you know, I got to think about, okay, well, how do I want the tables to lay out?
Sure.
You know, using good practices, I probably should, you know, create a nice layered architecture, you know, with a data access layer, et cetera, et cetera. And I have a variety of data access techniques to choose from. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's funny, there's a lot of choices in ADO.NET. And I always tell people, it's like, choice is good. Don't angst over which one it is.
Yeah.
But if I wanted to, you know, just put up, you know, a simple data access mechanism in SharePoint, you know, I've got a really, you know, slick mechanism to do that, right?
You got many, many mechanisms. Initially, when I started thinking about data access, and if you have a line of business data or a large database on the side that you want to integrate with, initially I think of the business data catalog. The business data catalog will dig into your database and expose that data as a web page inside of SharePoint. And you can even make that data searchable and findable through the SharePoint search mechanism. So that's the initial one, the one I do a handful of times in recent. But you're not limited to using DataView web parts. You can build your own custom web parts yourself that can connect back to the database. And once you build these web parts, and many people ask me about this, they get confused, am I required to do X, Y, and Z? The web part is just the container that has code like any other control. So if you can build a control to go hit your database using whatever pattern you want, we spoke of the MVP pattern this morning, you can do whatever you want and display that as HTML. So you can go back and hit any database you want, any web service you want. So, and then SharePoint Designer also has some data access. We can't forget about lists either. Lists are a type of data access, and sometimes it's good to use them as though they're like a small database table, and sometimes they don't work so well. So a little bit of knowledge of best practices around there definitely helps, but we've got many different data access scenarios.
Yeah, and let's dig into list a little bit, because that's kind of where my question was headed.
Okay.
Maybe I should have just said the word list in the question.
Yeah,
you know. But you know, because it's a very lightweight table approach that if I wanted to do something, again, there's some constraints around it, limitations, how many records you want to add to it a day,
exactly,
those kind of things. But for the most part, it allows me to quickly simply stand up, you know, a data table.
And, exactly.
And actually, you know, I've done this, you know, internally on some of our Microsoft sites, is I can actually, just using the end user tools, I can, you know, if I have administrative privileges, I can create a list, I can give people access to it, you know, and this is me as an end user.
Sure. And not just admin, you know, when you said administrative privileges, it's just not administrators of that site. It could be, I could give an individual permission to create lists as a designer of that site area. So it doesn't have to be an admin person.
Yeah. What I meant is that I've been granted
permissions
yes, to do, yes, that. You know, so one of the permissions, sure, I have on several sites is the ability to create lists.
Exactly.
It's something you can lock down.
Exactly.
But, you know, depending on the use case, it's a good thing to give the users.
So some people look at lists as a mini data table. Some people look at just a place to collect information. But lists in generally is rows and columns. So you define what columns, the title of the columns, and you define other names of the list. And what you get is that end user can come in, you automatically get an add, edit, and delete page. So if you're going to create a simple, let's just say an address, a collection of addresses, if you wanted to, for a project of some sort, if you were to do that in a database, you'd have to create the table, you know, create the database, create the table, and then you'd have to go back and you'd have to write up an add, edit, and delete page. Well, right now, if I create a list, I've got the add, edit, delete view page, including multiple views, because I can look at it in different orders. I've got the ability to sort, filter, and do some calculated values on that list. That's built in, so I got those for free.
Yeah, and you also get a lot of auditing?
Sure, yeah, you can turn on auditing, which will allow you to check who's looking at it, who's opening it, who's reading it, who's hit it, et cetera.
And you also, in the UI itself, that you actually get some presence-aware things. So I can see that if Darren updated the record recently, I can actually, you know, right from, you know,
that
page,
item,
I can actually send you an IM.
Exactly. If you have presence turned on, which by default it is, and you're all set up on an IM, like LCS, Live Communication Services, or if you're doing that, anytime you see a name, it recognizes that that's, you know, Darren right there. By his name, I'll put a little pawn there. You click on it, you can drop it down, and then you're into sending an IM. Possibly you can check to see if I have a meeting scheduled or when we can schedule a meeting. Maybe my phone number would be displayed so you can quickly call me, various things like that. So it's called presence awareness, and it allows you to quickly, you know, jump and talk to or collaborate or communicate with whoever that's associated with that name.
And that's built into a standard list, you know.
Pretty much anytime you see a name, like somebody edited, last modified it, or you had a name picker someplace with the name shown, you can get that presence pawn.
So I think we've just touched the surface on some of the similarities and some of the power that you get out of SharePoint. We could probably go on for hours and have a multi-part show on this. But I hope that people are excited about it. What I want to talk to you about, transition into kind of the things that you talked about this morning. I hope everybody's, you know, still listening to the show, and that they're really excited and they're saying, hey, I want to expand my skills and I want to, you know, kind of add, you know, a little bit of SharePoint knowledge to my repertoire. I'm already a .NET developer. Tell us how to get started. And I'm going to make that very open-ended. If you got a blog, a book, more importantly, I think everybody wants to know what kind of development environment they need to have,
sure,
set up, and that was your primary topic today. So I'll just go ahead and kick that over to you.
Since 2001, if you go way back and turn the Wayback Machine on, there was probably three of us that were doing SharePoint enough that, and that was before blogs were very much prevalent. We had some news groups and lists. I think everybody who did SharePoint knew everybody and had met everybody. So the amount of content out there was nil. Right now, there's so much SharePoint content out there from the SharePoint teams, from the TechNet, the MSDN sites, et cetera. all the MVPs that are blogging, all the other individuals that are blogging, all the downloads that you can get from the various conferences, that's the initial place to start. There's some excellent training out there if you want to get training. Some very high level, very great training for developers to jump from pure ASP.NET to SharePoint. And then the books, I have, sad to say, I have almost every book that's been written on SharePoint. My library now for SharePoint books go across about two whole shelves now. It's amazing all the books that are coming out. But initially what you want to get into is getting a dev environment and just getting your feet wet.
Right.
So
that's always the best way to learn, right?
Absolutely. Jump in there and get your feet wet. Get the SDK from Microsoft, download and start looking at it. You can right now, Microsoft has a virtual machine that you can download, a VHD file for a virtual PC that you can download off of the site. And you just go to Microsoft's and just search for SharePoint VHD. It has everything loaded up. You download it. Probably going to take a little bit. It's not a small one. And you should be ready to go. It is time-bombed, I think, till September or something like that. But you don't even have to set it up. But what I generally do is I like to see people set things up because that's the first time.
There's a learning process there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Don't. If it's hidden, you won't understand it's there. So initially what I'll do is I'll set up a server, like Server 2003 on a virtual machine, or now Server 2008 is where I'm setting everything up. After I set up Server 2008, I'm going to load up like Visual Studio Tools, 2008.
Let's go back to the server,
sure,
real quick, because you mentioned Windows Server 2003 or Server 2008, and I think, yes, it's pretty much doesn't matter which one, because SharePoint Server went on both. But
well, yeah, but you like the shiny one, though.
Yeah, well, you always got to have the new one, right?
New stuff.
But it's important to note that SharePoint, the server, doesn't run on XP or Vista.
Yeah, that's a good point, and one of the things that came up, obviously, in the topic this morning, SharePoint has a little bit different dev scenario around it. In general, you're going to find developers always developing off of a virtual machine, virtual PC hard drive that has SharePoint installed, SQL Server installed. And there's many reasons for that, but the biggest one is that remote development, if you're used to doing remote ASP.NET development or developing an ASP page on your XP box or your Vista box, that just doesn't work on SharePoint because SharePoint will not install on XP or Vista. So what we end up doing is creating these virtual environments, and everybody gets one, basically.
And this is a perfect use case for virtualization, right? Because this is...
Absolutely. I'm not sure how we did what we did without all this virtualization going on right now. Easily carry around many different environments based on different clients and just grab a new hard drive or boot up a new machine or something like that.
So you used to do it with dual boot, you know, using actual
dual
physical
boot,
hardware.
Or it was, yeah, my host, and I got really good at blowing away the host and recreating everything and remember what I had to copy so I didn't lose my mail, et cetera. But now it's all virtualized for me.
So we install, preferably in a virtual environment, but if you have an extra piece of hardware that's beefy enough, you could install
absolutely
it as the root. But it has to be the server operating system. And then we install SharePoint on top of that?
Well, before you get to SharePoint, you're going to install a few other things. You're going to need the .NET environment installed on there. You're going to need a 3.0, and you're probably going to grab 3.5. Now it's out, and SP1 as well. I also got to throw in Visual Studio. I'm using 2008 right now, SP1. I'll put that on there. And I'll get my base platform set up before I put on SharePoint. I'll get it all set up. And for me, I'll save it. And I'll make copies of it so I don't have to keep doing that over and over again. And I'll run one of the tools to take out the SIDs and regenerate it. So when I junk that one up, I can throw it away and get quickly back to a new clean machine. But once you get the server set up, you're going to need like SMTP services set up. You're going to need IIS set up on it and running before SharePoint installed. And the .NET framework, once you get all that set up, next thing I'll do is put on a SQL Server. Right now I'm doing 2008 Developer Edition, or 2005 will work as well. And that'll be your base. And then after that, generally, you can go into your SharePoint install and put SharePoint on there. So the only thing we say is generally we don't like to do the full install. We like to use SQL Server itself versus the MSDE, or the SQL Express now is what it's called.
Right.
Yeah, so we want to make sure that we get it hooked up the right way so we have SQL as our back end so we can, and we get all the tools for SQL, et cetera. At that point, you got Visual Studio on there. You're pretty much ready to start configuring your server, your SharePoint server, to run and get your web apps out there so you can actually code against them.
Okay, and Can you really quickly tell us what those steps are? We should probably point people, in the show notes to a good documentation that here's how to set it up, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of good documentation out there. And there's a lot of steps. But in general, once you get it out there, you need to set up things like your service accounts. You need to set up your shared services environment if you're doing MOS, and then come back around and set up your actual web app that you're going to deploy, and then create a site collection. So the central admin, once you do the setup, you go right to central admin, and it has an actual list in there of all the setup steps. Now, not every one has to be done for you to start developing, but they do say, here's what you need to do as an administrator to get this up and running. You just click off the steps, and it tells you where to go and what buttons to hit generally.
Okay. And about, of course, varies on the hardware you're using, et cetera, if you're coming off a CD or an ISO or whatever. Sure. But about how long would it take to do all the steps that you talked about now to where you're ready to create your first...
If I've already got my environment set up, so I've already got SQL actually tends to be the longest to install once you get all the service packs going on and you got .NET on there. I would say actually installing SharePoint on that single box, 15 minutes maybe it takes to install it on the box, and then you probably spend another, if you've done it many times, 15 to 20 minutes of going through and getting everything set up. So first time you're going to probably click around a few times trying to find everything.
Right.
But you can probably get one set up in a half an hour if you had the base OS all ready to go.
So maybe, plan like half a day, to set up everything from scratch.
Have the internet available. If you haven't done it before, have the internet available. There's so much information out there on how to set these up in different configurations, et cetera. It's hard not to find the answer right now.
So one of the hints I give people, particularly if you have like an MSDN subscription, you can download things. Mm-hmm. One of the things I've noticed and this is Larry's tip of the day, is that if I'm going to install something like SQL Server 2008 onto a virtual environment, mm-hmm. I don't use the CD because there's functionality in virtual PC that you can mount an ISO, so it's coming off the hard disk.
Exactly.
And that cuts down the amount of time it takes to install things phenomenally because you don't have all the seek time on it.
So everything I have, I think, is ISOs from MSDN downloads.
Yeah, so. And that'll save you a lot of time. The other tip I like to give people is that if you have two hard drives in your machine, if you put the VHD on a second hard drive, it's not contending with the base OS, and that can cut... Those two tips alone could cut hours off your install.
Exactly.
Time.
And actually, if you go through and learn how to speed up your virtual environment, the good amount of memory, the nice processor, but specifically getting a separate spindle, separate hard drive versus your base OS one, that's going to speed up just your dev environment completely. You've seen my setup. I've got all sorts of gadgets and wires hanging off the side of mine, but my PC is my host operating system, and that's it. Once I plug in my external drive on a SATA drive, that's where my virtual hard drives live. They don't contend with my actual...
Yeah, we'll actually take a picture of your thing and post it with the show because you have a laptop, but you don't have a portable PC because you've got all these wires hanging out all over it.
Many of us have gone... We've attempted to go to the SSD route. A bunch of us have the express card slot.
Right.
And we're dreaming about a nice express card, like a 32 gig express card that is fast enough that we can put a virtual drive in it. And then we can actually make our small laptops portable again.
Yeah.
There's nothing more frustrating than unhooking your laptop in the middle of something as you get up.
Yeah. So I'll take a picture of that and I'll post a link to it because it's kind of hilarious. I went up to you and you were sitting in a chair, next to the Moss Camp event, and you were kind of hanging everywhere.
That's pretty common of a lot of SharePoint developers. If you see Todd Bleeker sitting out there trying to get his session done, getting it ready, and he's got a 4-inch cord connecting his external hard drive. Every time he moves, he's unplugging it. So we tend to carry a lot of wires and stuff, mainly for the speed and the virtualization.
Right.
That is key for us.
Great. Now, one of the things that you did, one of the best parts about your session, and it's the one slide that you had that I took down verbatim, is that you actually put a list of ancillary tools. So what you've talked about now was the things I need to be able to create
these
my
the
first
key things, yeah,
right. To get up and running. But you had a great list of extra tools that are Darren's favorite for SharePoint development. Can you run through those real quick?
From memory, sure. I don't have that slide sitting in front of me right now. And to be serious, you'll find if for everybody who's doing SharePoint development, we've all got a different set of lists. But Visual Studio. Extensions for WSS, that's going to give me projects inside of Visual Studio to help me do my web parts, list templates, site templates, things like that. That's one that ends up on it. The biggest one is actually PowerShell. I'm a huge PowerShell SharePoint guy. Out of the box, there is no native integration, but if you know what you're doing, you can code a lot through PowerShell and not have to compile things. So PowerShell is like the first thing on my machine. The IE developer's toolbar,
right.
I may not have said that exactly right, but that's always on my machine.
Yeah, we'll put a little note in here that we actually did an IE show a couple episodes ago.
Okay.
That's been greatly improved for IE 8.
Okay.
And hallelujah, it's not a separate download anymore.
It's included in
As I understand it, it'll be included. It won't display by default because you don't want my mom seeing the developer toolbar.
Absolutely.
But it's actually going to be more integrated with the product.
The sad part is when I need it, I can't remember what it's called, and I spend half a day going, now what was that? I got to have it. I always forget where I put it, and I always spend half a day trying to find it again. So if it's included, you're going to save me a lot of time.
All right.
those are the big ones, but just for this code camp, someone showed an example, or one of the developers for code camp was using SharePoint Manager 2007, and I had not seen this, and asked him, well, what are you using this for, so I can talk somewhat intelligently about this. And they are using it basically in a developer. When we go against a list, we programmatically go against a list, we need the internal field name, not the title that it shows.
Okay.
Okay, so there's a little trick there. We need the internal name, and you don't see that generally inside the UI. I could call it, I can call the field name
first name.
First name with no space, because SharePoint doesn't like spaces real well. It's, you know, URLs. We don't like spaces in URLs. But the title may be just name. So I need first name. Well, some of you can guess, some of you can't. We spend a lot of time clicking different places and finding out where we can find that name hidden in a URL. And this tool actually dumps a lot of properties, a lot of lists and field names and columns. You can easily go find that and save yourself a lot of time. So that'll probably show up in all my virtual machines for SharePoint as a share, and it's a CodePlex project. So if you're developing SharePoint and you're not heading around CodePlex and typing in the word SharePoint, you're going to find a lot of tools, a lot of guidance inside of CodePlex, more than you can imagine, to be honest. There's just tons and tons of SharePoint guidance out there. So those are the big ones. I can't remember.
Yeah, you talked about the Patterns and Practices group just released some SharePoint guidance.
I think on the 4th this month, I think, is when it released. So it's funny, we're doing a kind of a start to finish small application for this Moss camp, and the Patterns and Practice group just released a small application that gives us all sorts of information, including how to unit test SharePoint, which has been difficult from the start, but they're giving us guidance, and a few of us worked with the team just as kind of like, that is a best practice, we don't do it that way, or I would do it XY. We had a lot of very good discussion about that. So they put out a pretty good product, and you can go download that, look at that reference application, and then go to the help files and actually see some of the decisions, because there's a lot of times that half of us, there's, let's say, a group of 20 of us, discussing what was the best practice or what was commonly used in the scenario. Is it a SharePoint template or a SharePoint a site definition or a template, which one, pros and cons?
Right.
Well, I haven't read all the documents, the final documents, but they discuss why we went left instead of right, why we chose this and you could have chose this. A lot of good information in there.
And hence the word guidance, right? This is not the rule, right?
Yeah, there's no such thing as best practices, I think. You get a lot of people together, they agree that this is the right way to go, but maybe not the only way to go.
Right, and oftentimes you'll see that, a lot of people will sometimes criticize, .NET in general of too many choices. And I think that there's some clearly wrong things sometimes.
Certainly.
But it's always the best right for your situation. And a lot of times it's just like what you're comfortable with.
Exactly. It's amazing. As I do know a lot of the SharePoint people have been in it a while. And to get us all on the phone talking about an upgrade scenario or a site template versus a site definition, and to hear the different stories coming out from everybody, you realize there's no right or wrong answer. We need to pick one for the solution because we have to pick one, but we should let them know that we could have gone this way as well based on a lot of key factors.
You had one other thing on your slide that I'd like you to mention, and that's the mocking framework.
Oh, type mock isolator, and I am by no means the unit test expert with it, but type mock isolator is a tool, and it is one that you have to go download and purchase. I'm not sure about their licensing policy at all, but it is one tool that's really kind of going to the forefront for SharePoint unit testing. Before that, it was very difficult to test it, but they seem to be getting a lot of pluses to try that and to use that. And the Patterns and Practice, the reason I really came to know TypeMock is because the Pattern Practices Group was using that for their unit testing. So I've got some more investigation into that. So I'm not comfortable with that tool just yet, but I was just out on their site and they have videos specifically around, you know, SharePoint unit testing. So they do a lot of videos for training out there. So it seems to be a really interesting tool. A lot of positive comments out there right now.
Great. And we'll put, again, we'll put links to all this stuff. You know, this is going to be some hefty show notes today, but but I think that's typical of SharePoint, right? A lot of pointers to good information
you know,
that's out there.
Yeah, there's so much out there. Like I said, I talked to a couple of people early on and we say, remember way back when we all knew each other and there was this email list and that was it. And you look now, you can't even enumerate how many blogs about primarily about SharePoint are out there. It's impossible. There's so many of them. So many white papers now, so many people moving to the front of this product. That we're just getting a lot of information out there. It's just crazy, a lot of tools.
So I just want to quickly close with asking you, you know, kind of an open-ended question, you know, that, you know, if somebody's considering getting into SharePoint, again, adding this this great skill to their you know, the repertoire, you know, any final recommendations, any thoughts on that?
To getting started, I guess.
Because I will say that we need more SharePoint developers. I always hear that from everybody. It's like,
absolutely.
Hey, I'm looking for good SharePoint developers.
Absolutely. You know, from a dev perspective, I always look for somebody who has strong ASP.NET because we can teach them the new parts about SharePoint. But if you got that strong ASP.NET, we don't talk about how do you code a web page. We don't talk about how you code a content page. They already understand it. We just teach you this very specifics about SharePoint, how to put that in place into ours. There is a lot around just understanding the concepts of collaboration, too. This is a technology, so to be really successful in it, you need to understand the collaboration, the concepts, some around business intelligence, because that's what you're ultimately building. You're using SharePoint to build those type of tools. So without that general knowledge or learning that, you know, you're building something, maybe you're not fitting the need. But lots of good education out there, and I tell anybody who takes the time, go find one of these high-performance training groups out there that are primarily focusing on SharePoint. It's well worth your money.
Good. Do you have a URL that we can point people to?
Sure. You can go to my blog. It's www.darrinbishop, all one word, darrinbishop.com/blog. Primarily that's SharePoint, 90% SharePoint, some PowerShell in SharePoint lately. And I'll have to get back up on it and get more going there.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being on the Thursday Developer.
Oh, thank you.
If you're in the United States and you'd like to see some of the best sessions from the PDC delivered locally to you, check out the MSDN Developer Conference at msdndevcon.com. We'll be bringing some of the best sessions from the PDC to 11 cities across the United States. We hope to see you there. Thanks for listening to the Thirsty Developer. This podcast is available on the Zune Marketplace and the iTunes Music Store. You can also find a link to the feed at thirstydeveloper.com. For general comments on the show or to suggest a topic, send an email to thirstydeveloper@live.com.